Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in North Carolina and was a collegiate star in football and basketball at the University of Minnesota. He was drafted in the third round by the Detroit Lions in 1968 and played 10 years. He's been with the Lions for 40 years and is their assistant director of pro personnel. After being passed over 24 times, he'll be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame on August 4th. His name? Charlie Sanders, the Gentle Giant. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Charlie Sanders, the All-Pro Hall of Fame tight end of the Detroit Lions. Charlie, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, you know, at this age, you look back on your childhood, and I think I had a normal childhood. There were a lot of things that I found out later that people say, well, that had to have been challenging, but I still say I had a normal childhood. I didn't miss a lot. Of course, I didn't have a lot, so it wasn't much to miss. But I grew up on a farm, just a country kid. My dad, when I finally realized what was happening around me, I remember this physically large guy, 6'3", about 230. So he was in and out of the Army in terms of coming back and forth from home. I would see him on occasion, and my aunt basically raised me along with my two brothers, and she also was very physical too when it came to physical in terms of stature. But I just knew work. That was part of the farm life, the chores. I mean, there were no TV. You'd sit around, you listen to the radio, and you visualize what you were listening to. So that was your entertainment. Everything else was centered around work. And I grew to enjoy it. I mean, I grew to try to perfect work, and I don't know if that was a carry on into where I am and what I'm doing right now. But I remember very little about my parents, other than that sparse in and out with my dad in the military. There wasn't anything that I didn't think was out of the norm until later on. I found out I lost my mother at age 2, so I made an adjustment and it didn't affect me. I didn't think that psychologically I'd gone through any adjustments. I look back and think that may have been the best thing at age 2 versus at age 12 or 22. Mm-hmm. So that was basically my childhood until age 8, and we moved to Greensboro, North Carolina. And my dad, out of the services, had worked hard to get his engineering degree and became a professor of engineering, and we moved to Greensboro out of the country, which was a shock because that was the only life that I knew. And it was a readjustment for me. That was the first time I ever heard about sports and athletics. Everything down south was chores, from feeding the chickens, chopping wood, to milking the cow and things like that. So it was education for me to adjust to something I'd never been around and really didn't know how to participate in, and that was sports.
North Carolina, you're very good in athletics, football, basketball, and you decide to go to the University of Minnesota. Up north, cold, white people. Why, Charlie?
Well, I like to think that they tricked me. They got me up there in the spring. I had never really seen snow before. But that's just part of the reason. Growing up in the South, it was doing the sit-ins, you know, the sit-in situation, and I was a part of that. And I'll never forget the summer of my senior year when I had the opportunity to work during the summer and try to earn some money going into college. Really didn't know what direction. But I remember a two-year-old in this restaurant basically using the N-word in identifying me to her mother. And I knew then that there had to be a different world somewhere. And after visiting the University of Minnesota, it was, I'd say, a shock to see or feel the reaction when you walked in the, quote, front door and you didn't hear necks cracking or you didn't feel the eyeballs on you. So I just knew I had to get out of that environment and see if there was another one. And that was the primary reason I ended up at the University of Minnesota. And I often say if I'd had an opportunity to go further north, I probably would have. And that was a great thing for me educationally in terms of my relationship now with people. I'd hate to think what my attitude and mindset would be had I remained in the South. So it was a good thing for me at that time.
What was the coldest day in those 4 years you spent in Minnesota?
There were a lot of them. It's not just one, trust me. I remember coming from North Carolina. It was about three of us out of the state, and we had made a pact, you know, if it was below zero, you know, we weren't going to class. Well, little did we know, it was 3 months later, you know, hey, I think we should go to class, you know. We're on the verge of flunking out of here. So it was a lot of cold days, but we adjusted because – that was what was expected of you.
Can you talk a little bit about your career with the Gophers?
Sparse. In terms of, you know, they didn't have freshman eligibility, so we were on what we called a hamburger squad, where we'd take all the beatings from the varsity members. My sophomore year, they said, okay, we're going to put you at safety. I came out of high school as a defensive end, tight end at 195. And so they put me at the safety position, and the shock of my life was in Ohio State Stadium, and here comes John Brockington, and the hole opened up larger than anything I'd ever seen in my life. It wasn't a picture-perfect tackle, so I think they realized this isn't for Charlie. So the following year, we lost Aaron Brown to the pros, and they said, okay, we're going to put you at defensive end. So I had the challenge of putting on about 30 pounds during the summer. And I ended up starting at defensive end my junior year. Lost my job for about 3 weeks to an All-American till he got injured. And I went back in and took the position. And then the following year, we lost our tight end. So they said, okay, we have an All-American at defensive end. We're going to move you to tight end. So that was the adjustment that year. And it was a pretty good year. Everything was new and foreign to me. So it's amazing that I look back and realize how I got here. I have no answer. I just followed the X's and O's and the instruction of my coaches, and things worked out for me. It's still a mystery when you say, how did you get to the Hall of Fame?
We're talking to Charlie Sanders. When we come back, we'll ask him about being drafted by the Detroit Lions. And I'm Jack Grasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Crasula.
We're talking to Charlie Sanders, and in 1968, Charlie, you're the third round pick of the Detroit Lions. Talk about that.
Well, in a sense, it was discouraging because you get the hype, you're going to be a number one draft pick, and so your expectations are way up there. As you said, I ended up in the third round. I was the first tight end taken in the draft, but it wasn't until the third round. Mike Hull, a fullback out of Southern Cal, was actually, quote, the first tight end taken by Chicago. So the Lions drafted me, and I had an opportunity also to go to Toronto. And the ironic thing, as you mentioned, you know, coming from the South and all the racial tension and the things I went through, you're just dealing with a riot situation here in Detroit. And I, you know, just gotten married and had a family, and I just wasn't ready to get back into that. And my agent and I were actually on our way to Toronto to sign our contract. And we left Muskegon, and of course, to get to Toronto to drive, you have to drive right past the Lions office on Michigan Avenue, 1401 Michigan Avenue. And my agent out of nowhere said, well, let's stop in and give Russ Thomas and the Lions another shot at you. I was being offered $16,000 by Toronto and $15,000 by the Lions. So we stopped, and Russ ups the ante to another 1,000 to 17,000 with the stipulation you don't call Toronto. So I ended up signing the contract and never made it to Toronto, and I've been here ever since.
Did they give you a free Ford or something?
Well, no. I'll put it this way. By the time I got my salary and my bonus, my agent took his personal checkbook out of his pocket, had me sign the lines over him, and he wrote me a personal check. So it wasn't that much from a financial standpoint that was involved.
Offline, Charlie, we were talking about the U of M has just signed a deal with Adidas, where Adidas is going to pay them $8 million a year to outfit the 24 U of M teams. When I told you that, what did you say?
I had to laugh. I said, we had to buy our own shoes in pro. If you wore them out, or that was too bad. And it's amazing. You look at guys now that have shoe contracts, glove contracts, and they wear them one time and they toss them. So it's a big business. It's a big business.
Talk about your 10 all-pro years with the Lions.
Great. Just a great experience. I tell people it was just fun, and that's why this situation is unbelievable, because I had so much fun doing what I was doing, and of course everybody said, well, you worked at it, but there must be a different definition that I had for work, and that would be the fact that I did have fun doing it. To me, this is just icing on the cake. I've had a great career here. The fans have been great, the Fords have been great, and I've had opportunities to leave when I did play, but for whatever reason, I just had to stay with the Detroit Lions, and in the end, it was the best thing for me. I'm very happy with the career that I've had there, the longevity I had as an employee of Ford and the Lions, and my family situation here. It's just been a dream come true.
Can you share with us one Dick Butkus story?
Well, there isn't just one. The one that will pop to my mind was my rookie year. We were getting ready to play Chicago, and by this time, Butkus had already established himself as the monster of the Midwest. You know, his famous quote was to hit a player so hard he'd see his head rolling down the field, you know. So as a rookie, you know, I'm reading all this, and I'm kind of intrigued by it, and had basically said if I ever ran into this guy or he ran into me, I wasn't going to let him tackle me. And sure enough, never saw him, but I knew it was Butkus because I'd never been hit like that before. And we struggled. I was determined he wasn't going to take me down. And this was before the peace sign was so popular. He actually got me in a headlock, took his two fingers, and started gouging at my eyes. And at that point in time, I'm like, okay, you're a rookie, you're married, you know, maybe you should consider going down. And ever since that time, we just had this thing about each other. He would take shots at me, and I would take shots at him. And in the end, he got more shots at me than I did at him.
Can you share the Alty Taylor story?
Oh, the Alty Taylor story. That's a classic. Alty came in two or three years after I did. And, of course, he's like all the rookies. You know, we're going to set the world on fire. And he had a chance to play against Chicago. And not uncommon, a back getting ready to get tackled. He knows he can't gain any more yards. He steps out of bounds. And that infuriated Butkus because he didn't get a chance to hit Alty. So Butkus kept coming. And Alty all of a sudden realizing, he starts picking up his speed. Well, a few seconds later, you look up, and Alty Taylor is actually running in the stands, and Butkus is behind him chasing him. And it infuriated Butkus to the point that he had a shot at Alty, and Alty wasn't going to let him hit him. That's just the type of temperament he had.
The late Bob Reynolds, who broadcast Lion games for many years, summed you up best when he said, quote, Charlie Sanders was more than a page in the Lions record book. He was a leader and inspiration to his teammates. He has that intangible called class. Never once did I hear Charlie criticize his coaches, his management, or his teammates. He put his career philosophy into words far better than I could when Sanders said, quote, I like to think I played the game the way it should be played, all out. Anything less, you're cheating the man upstairs who gave you the talent in the first place.
I remember that. And that hasn't changed. That philosophy really hasn't changed. I often tell athletes that at some point in time, they're going to have to be honest with one question, and that's after they retire, and that is, could I have been better? And if they say no, then they are lying, because there was always room for improvement, and that was all based on the mental approach toward the game. So the work ethic, there is no excuse. There are degrees in terms of talent, in terms of drafting first, second, third, and fourth. Talent has degrees. Work ethic should not have any. So I'd like to think that I challenged myself on a daily basis and felt good when I put my head down at night.
We're talking to Charlie Sanders, and when we come back, we'll talk about the fact that even though he'd been eligible for 24 years to get into Canton, it wasn't until 2006 that he decided to actually go to the inductions in Canton to see what they were all about. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Charlie Sanders. Charlie, August of 2006 was the first time you ever went to the induction ceremonies in Canton. Why and what was that like?
Well, I think there were more emphasis placed on the Hall of Fame and the induction by the sports writers and other people than me. It just never was on the forefront of my mind. And I think the year before I'd missed out by one vote to John Madden, and the year before that, two votes. So Matt Millen said, you know what, maybe if you show your face, it might help. So he convinced me to ride down with him. I had an opportunity to see guys that I had played with and them to see me and, of course, some of the committee there and be a part of the festivities. And actually, when I left there, I felt that this was the place I wanted to be. And that's when it became important to me. And fortunate for me, the next year, you know, I'm in.
February 3rd, 2007. You're in Miami. And this 40-man team votes all morning. What happens?
Well, I'll put it this way. I didn't oversleep. It was a lot of tension. I never asked myself what I was going to do if I didn't get in, now that I'm in Miami. But it was a lot of excitement and anticipation, a lot of fluttering of the heart, and people were trying to occupy my time, get my mind off of it. And we calmly waited in the room next to where all the action was taking place. And I can recall watching the TV just like everyone else. And when they called my name the second time, everybody reacted but me. And I went into this state of shock, I guess, and I wanted to make sure that I heard what I thought I heard, and the only way I could do that was by looking around me and realizing that there were friends and family that were excited for me. And after that, I've been smiling since February.
This was your 25th try. You're now one of only 241 NFL football players in history to make the Hall of Fame. It's the one thing, Lem Barney said, it's the one job you can never be fired from.
Yeah, you hear a lot of that, especially the veterans. They have all the answers. You know, I'm just a rookie. I mean, at 60 years old, trust me, I'm a rookie. This is my first year. Again, I had so much fun prior to that. This is like an icing on the cake. I'm probably more ecstatic and happy for the city of Detroit, the Detroit Lions, especially my family, because I took so much from them during the course of those years. And I think this was the best time for me right now, this point in time in my life, than 10, 15 years ago, because I have some young kids then, and I don't think they would even realize what was going on. So this is the right time.
We're talking to Charlie Sanders. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Charlie Sanders. Charlie, it's this Saturday afternoon in Miami. There's about 400 sports reporters, etc., in the room, plus me. Six of you get elected. Michael Irvin, classy people, Roger Worley, etc. And when you were announced and came up to the podium, a couple of young people went around and passed out handouts. And it was a very classy four-color brochure from the Detroit Lions. Right. You on the cover, Pro Football Hall of Fame, class 2007. They'd done this not knowing. You know, it's not like you were Troy Aikman on the first attempt. This was your 25th attempt. They were the only team that did that. Jerry Jones was there with Irvin, you know. He didn't pass out anything. What do you say about that?
It's just class. It's a class organization, you're right. They felt it. They felt this was the time. I hope they did. You know, they were prepared. You're absolutely right. They were the only team that I guess felt that our guy's going to win this time. And it made me feel good. It showed class and it showed support. That was just great.
You get to the microphone, okay? Here's your opening statement. Here's the first paragraph. Thank you to the senior committee. You guys have been tremendous. I really thank you for all your support. The Ford family, the Detroit Lions organization, they've been tremendous. There are very few people that can stand here in this position I'm in today and say that they've spent half their life with the same organization and then be presented with such a great honor. That's what the Ford family and that's what the Detroit Lions organization means to me. I would like to express my tremendous thanks to the Ford family and the Detroit Lions organization. To the fans of Detroit, the greatest fans, in my opinion, in the NFL. We're not there yet, but we'll get there. And just as you've supported me through all my years, my family, I know that you're going to support the Detroit Lions. You didn't read that. Yeah. That came
from
the heart.
Yeah. It's amazing. It sounded good. You know, that it just flowed out. I feel that way. That's the way I feel. The Detroit Lions, that's my family. That's my home. I do anything to protect the Detroit Lions. And I do feel that the fans are the best in the NFL. And they've shown that. And I understand the frustration. I'm frustrated too, but I never turn my back. And that's what makes Detroit Lions fans the greatest.
When you get into on Saturday, August 4th, you get to have someone present you into the Hall of Fame. Who will your presenter be?
It wasn't even a second thought. It was Mr. Ford. I was more afraid that he would say no. His first response to me was, I'd be honored. And I'm like, no, I would be honored, you know. It had to be Mr. Ford. No questions asked.
He's taken a lot of hits from these, you know, sports shows. Statements. He doesn't want to win. Mm-hmm. What do you say about that?
Well, that's one of the reasons that I wanted him to be my presenter is because I know all of that is not true. I know the character of the man. I know what he wants. If that be the case, then you should not accept or receive me because I had a lot to do with us not winning also. His desire is to bring a championship to the Detroit Lions. He's done everything that I feel a person can do. And for that, I give him respect. I give him the respect of, you know what, no matter what you say, what you think, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And eventually, we're going to see the results. And I'm going to be the happiest person in the world because I know that the Detroit Lions are going to win.
What do you say when you hear he's too loyal?
Boy, that's a bad thing to be, is loyal, isn't it? You know what I say? That's my kind of guy, you know?
What have you learned from William Clay Ford?
Persistent. Don't give up. You know, it's not always the expectation of other people. It's what you expect of yourself. Because you know what? You're the only one that truly, truly knows. I respect him. I respect him as a man, as a human being, and as an owner.
in 6 days, you're going to stand on that podium. They're going to give you your bust. You're going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Has it hit you yet, Charlie?
It's starting to. People say, "Well, you're getting jittery. You know, you're getting scared. You're getting it's the realization of what the Hall of Fame is all about. And the closer you get to it, the bigger it gets. I don't think I'll ever settle into what it's all about. You can't explain the feeling that you have, and the old timers say, just sit back and enjoy the ride, and it's going to be a long ride. So, you know, I'm a rookie, so I'm going to listen.
You know, you could look in Webster's Dictionary under the word loyal and see your picture. You've been with one organization for 40 years. You've been married to Georgiana for 40 years, 9 children, 6 daughters. How much are every one of those daughters in Georgiana getting new outfits?
Well, if they are, I'm not paying for all of them. It's been a great life. It's been, my kids, my family. You couldn't ask for any more, and that's why it's important that, the family enjoy this. Because again, they've sacrificed for so long, and if nothing else, I can say here, Daddy is giving back now. it's just a great opportunity, not only for the Lions, but for the fans.
You're getting in with Gene Hickerson, Michael Irvin, Bruce Matthews, Thurman Thomas, and Roger Worley. What will be the theme of your acceptance speech next Saturday?
Oh. I've been working on it. I never thought about a theme, but my whole philosophy about life and where I am has always been that it was God's plan. It was written. So if there be a philosophy or a theme, then it would be the fact that my life was written. I just played the role.
You've played it very, very well.
Thank you.
Job well done. Job well done. What would your dad say, or what will your dad say from upstairs when Mr. Ford presents you for induction?
My dad, he wouldn't say much. If my dad said something once, he said it a lot. He would just smile. That was the nature of my dad. He's was not a very emotional guy, but you could feel the love.
Your wife, Georgiana, your 9 children, your grandchildren, what do you hope they think when you're up there?
I just want them to be proud, and I know they are, and I want them to sit back and enjoy this. This is more theirs than it is mine. I just want them to embellish in everything that's going to be offered, and that's acceptance, that's the rewards, everything that goes along with this nomination. I want them to think of it as theirs, not mine.
This is their day, not your day.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Explain that.
I've had my day. I had my fun. This is icing on the cake. And so what better situation to be in than to take this cake and share it with someone else? It may be my party, but that doesn't mean I have to be the only one having fun. That's what it means.
What does football teach us about life? We all watch it. What does it teach us?
Teaches you about you. In the end, it's all about you. People say, well, this is a team sport, but it starts out with an individual attitude, and that's what this game is all about, the growth of the mind, not necessarily the physical accomplishment.
We're talking to Charlie Sanders, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Charlie Sanders, who, after being passed over 24 times, will be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame next Saturday, August 4th. Tony Dungy. He's a gentleman. Never screams. When you think of pro football coaches, Ditka, Parcells, Lombardi, screamers, ranters, ravers, how has he been successful?
Well, number one, you got to have the talent. After that, the philosophy comes into play, but you can't win without talent. To get people to buy in, get your players to buy into you, whether you be a screamer or whether you be, like Tony, reserved and so. Your players have to buy into you and your philosophy and then take that talent and display it. And I think it's a different philosophy that works for Tony no matter where he goes. And you could bring or put Tony in a different situation and it may not work. It's just an ideal situation for Tony, and the players believe in him and what he's saying. And again, it doesn't have to be screamed or yelled.
When Bum Phillips was with the Houston Oilers, they asked him once, talk about Don Shula. And he said, well, he's the only guy that on Tuesday can take Theron and beat Usson, and then on Sunday take Usson and beat Theron. What separates the greatest coaches from the rest?
I refer to it as situation ethics. And to me, that is the ability of your coach to know what each player does and under what situation. Every player isn't a third down player. Every player isn't a pressure player. And that's why, and you mentioned Shula, I respected he and Landry, because you look up and Mercury Morris was out of the game and Jim Kick was in. And Calvin Hill was out of the game. And you had another
Robert Newhouse.
And you say, why? Why are you taking on situation ethics? Everybody doesn't perform under the same situation the same way. So in order to get that performance, you as a coach have to really know that player and individually.
How's our Lions going to do this year?
I think we're going to surprise some people. I know we're going to surprise them because I think Rod spent last year getting just what I talked about earlier. And that's people to buy into his philosophy. And I think that the players have. The ones that didn't are gone. And so the expectation is not now set by Rod. It's set by the players. They're going to win games on the fact that a lot of teams are not going to outplay them. They're not going to out-hustle them. They're not going to play with the same work ethics. That's going to win for them.
ESPN for the last few weeks has this daily segment, Who's Now?, where they took the 32 hottest athletes in the world and, going to pare it down. And when they're pitching each one, it's who they've dated, what commercials they have, endorsement deals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, versus you. You and Georgiana, 40 years, 9 kids. Why?
That's a good question. Well, at least I'm glad I'm not on that ESPN survey. But my dad had a good philosophy that he passed over to me one time, and he says, son, if you gotta get married, marry pretty with it. He says, because they're all the same. So I've always thought, where are you gonna go? Why are you gonna pioneer? You probably end up right back where you were in the first place. It's just been a good situation.
Talk about the need for education today.
And when you mention that, it goes back to my dad. It was education first, then you earned the right to play sports. And I think it's even more of a necessity now, especially when you look at actually where we haven't gone from the mid-60s. There is a separation between the have and the have-nots. There's a separation between the educated and uneducated. And I just shiver sometimes, and I tell my kids, you're in trouble. Without an education, you're really in trouble. Even with one, you're going to have a hard time. So it's a dire necessity, and I don't think enough emphasis is placed on the education of our young people.
Lee Iacocca's book, Where Are the Leaders? What's a great leader, Charlie?
Right philosophy and the ability to teach it. And I agree 100% with what Lee Iacocca is saying, because I do feel that the leadership, especially the black leaders, we don't have. And the message that the ones that profess to be isn't delivered in the right way. I really believe we've regressed from the mid-60s in terms of my generation, our generation, and what we were focusing on. And I think we kind of let the ball slip by passing it on to our kids because their focus isn't in the same direction that ours. I think we've regressed.
I was talking to a couple. They have some young children, and they say when the sports come on, we turn it off because of the steroids, you know, the Barry Bonds, the NBA ref, the Michael Vick situation, the Pac-Man Jones. It's the Tour de France. It seems like every day they're throwing another guy out. Talk about the steroids and these other issues in sports.
Well, there are issues that are prevalent today because you have medical science. I mean, we didn't have to worry about steroids. We didn't have to worry about cocaine. It wasn't here. So had it been, we would probably be dealing with the same situation. It just happens to be a sign of the times. And it doesn't matter whether you're in sports, a referee, baseball player, whatever the case may be, doctor, lawyer, we're all human. And where we go has nothing to do with the profession we're in. Because of the humanistic place we're in, that's what we are. We make bad decisions, and that has nothing to do with the profession. It sends a bad sign to the young adults that zero in on us as athletes. But it's also important that they also zero in on doctors and lawyers. But you're going to still have that percentage of human mistakes.
9 children, 6 daughters. Talk about anything is possible. One of your daughters is a 6-time boxing champion.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Well, if you had 9 kids, somebody's got to be something. But I'm still amazed. It wasn't what I had in mind when I first looked at her and held her as a baby, but she wanted to do that. And like any parent, you support her. And I'm happy for her. I really am.
Do you go to the matches?
I go to the matches. I'm able to sit there and be as calm as I possibly can. I'm getting better. I really am.
Has she ever fought Ollie's daughter?
They're working on that. They've talked. So last I understood, maybe about January, February. So.
She need an agent for that match?
No, she has a dad.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
No matter what in life you decide to do, make sure you're happy, because that's the only way you're going to determine success. It has nothing to do with the size of your home, amount of money in your pocket. That it's about what's in your heart.
Charlie Sanders, you're going into the Hall of Fame in 6 days. You not only are a Hall of Fame football player, you're a Hall of Famer in this community to the Lions organization, and you're a Hall of Fame man. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me here.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Sports.